You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and new branch manager, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, VP of Sabre Retail.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Have you seen a ghost?
Seen and banged.
I don't remember that part.
That's from a deleted scene.
Seen and banged. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, we are discussing season 8. After that, we'll head to the conference room for some questions sent in from our Scott's Tots. And we'll finish up with some trivia sent in by the other Edwin.
Oh.
That's right. That's right. But before we get into all that, do we have any housekeeping to start out with, Alex Ward?
Oh, hey, that's me. Nope, not much. Just, there's a couple things we'll get to why this episode's coming out a day late, because usually we do release at some point on a Thursday, and it's no longer Thursday, at least on the Pacific Coast.
That's right.
West Coast? Pacific Coast? But join our Patreon, of course. Get into that exclusive tots clots. That's different.
Wait, I like the tots clots.
Yeah, how much?
Because here's what's up. Here's what's up, everybody. We were gonna record last night, but I have 11 stitches in my left hand now. I put a box cutter into my thumb and index finger. I have some very gruesome, bloody pictures. If you would like
graphic.
Them.
Sean showed me before we started recording. My God.
If you would like that to be posted on the Discord somewhere,
I almost lost
let
my
me
pretty
know.
Lunch.
It was a work injury, so I think it's office related.
Cha-ching.
But
the things you do for love, hey?
Yeah, that's right. I don't have to pay for any of it. And you know, I get a lot of sympathy, and that's
score.
Great.
Free stitches.
Free sympathy.
Free stitches. I'm sorry.
Free stitches, no top scum. These are choice.
Yeah.
These babies.
I might not be able to fully grip a golf club for the rest of my life, but we'll see.
just when he was taking off.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if my reaction was a little much. Sean was going to tell me, and I was like, save it for the pod.
Yeah.
Man, I'm glad to hear you're doing a little better. And, you know, he had to
see a hand surgeon.
Yeah.
Not yet. I haven't been there yet, but... Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. They'll have to reopen the thumb. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude, can the you pictures, like, the pictures are not for the faint of heart. That was pretty cool.
No,
it's pretty.
But heavy. I'll post them if anyone wants them. Ooh, wow. I got a splint on the thumb, 7 stitches across the thumb joint, and 4 in the index finger. Please be careful when you're using a very long, fresh box cutter blade to cut a foam mattress in half in a driveway. I know that's not something people normally do, but
you never know. Someone out there. Know. Someone out there is listening to our podcast while they're cutting a mattress with a box
right
cutter.
Now.
Oh, man. I should go get some safety mittens.
It really made me feel like we should have been talking about the episode, The Injury, tonight. But instead, we're going to talk about season 8.
Wait, let's finish with, now that you filled in your tots clots
all right.
on your thumbs. Joy and Scott's Tots. That's at patreon.com/MichaelScott. Join our Discord, which is open to the public, but with exclusive Tots channels. Get ad-free episodes. Get our bonus contents. And we'll have our monthly mailbag. We're going to be recording that coming up this weekend. So
very soon, yeah.
That's coming up. And that's the best part of my month right there. Best part of my day. Walking over by Stanley's desk. maybe we'll get some more details on Sean's workplace accidents on the monthly mailbag. So that's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, pay for your Scott's, your tots clots.
I definitely heard you say, I heard you say it as tots squat.
Tots squats. That's our workout program.
Yeah, like throwing up plates on the
yeah.
How much squat could a Scott's tot squat if a Scott's tot could
squat?
Tot squat.
I like that.
This is
I
the
like
kind
that.
Of content you can expect 24 hours a day, 7
Patreon,
days a week.
$5 a month.
For only $5. All right, we're giving it away. That's an incredible price. What a value.
Every idea, gold.
Yeah. Other, you know, other Patreons, they have multiple price tiers. Not us. Not us.
All right, I'm throwing the towel over the housekeeping. We're going to move on to today's episode, which is season 8. Okay? So we've done on this podcast, we've already done 1 through 7 seasons. It's kind of unbelievable, really. These big season overview episodes.
Do you remember when we did 4 and 5, and it was like, oh my god, we're already on season 5, and like
we were blasting through them.
We were like, what are we going to do episodes about, like next year? That was like 3 years ago. I feel like we did those. It's been a while.
What a time to be alive.
But season 8 is an extremely important episode to discuss in terms of because this is post Michael Scott, and The Office really did struggle with viewership after Steve Carell left the show. And I think that, you know, we obviously have expressed on this show many times that once Michael leaves the show in season 7, seasons 8 and 9 are very weak. But I'm excited to discuss and debate why season 8 is worth watching.
Debate the hashtag debate the 8. There's something.
Deeb 8.
There you go.
Every idea, gold.
We can't miss.
I agree. I think it's going to be a good discussion. Because I think, like...
Let's have it.
One thing for me is that... Yeah. Well, and I think as an additional... for additional context, we've talked about a lot of season 8 already on this show. Because, of course, you know, within our back catalog, the Florida arc and a lot of individual episodes and different times talking about Andy as manager. Like, there've been, we've covered season 8 quite a bit. Robert California, we've talked about quite a bit. So
Nelly,
it's not
Gabe.
As if season 8, Nelly, it's not as if season 8 is uncharted territory for us, or this is, you know, some of the first time talking about it. But I think the discussion today will probably be a bit more of a macro level than on going into the individual episodes, although I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that as well. Yes. I think one thing that that I'm kind of interested to talk about is that I don't think, I mean, this is a theme, but I don't think season 8, especially in with all this extra time, I think season 8 has grown on me quite a bit, more so than I maybe would have expected, which is a little different from season 9. I don't necessarily feel the same way about season 9. But I am curious to hear your guys' thoughts on the season, how it compares to the rest of the show, and how it compares to season 9.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Nope. My short version is very similar to Edwin's. Grown on me. It much like the cordyceps in The Last of Us, continues to overtake me. And the longer I am with it, the more I enjoy it. It's no secret I how big of a Robert California fan I am. He's obviously doing a lot of heavy lifting for me this season. Nelly's grown on me a lot. So it's not like season 8 has, in a way. It's almost, I've just grown a lot more appreciation for some of the characters that are thrust into action a little more in season 8. I think it's no coincidence that, like, the DVD cover for season 8, the season image is like the full ensemble, as a lot of them up until that point had been a core of five or six people,
or Michael at front and center,
or Mike, and with Michael was always front and center, and that was very much intentional. Of like, when Steve Carell left the show, they were like, the showrunners were confident and said, you know, publicly, like, we believe in this ensemble, this can work without Steve Carell, we will show you. All these years later, for me, right, it's like, It pays off. The longer time goes on. I didn't really like it at first. I didn't know what it was. Okay, didn't know it. It was a stranger. Didn't like it. Now I do.
Look, don't know. Super care.
Right.
Season eight. It started in September 22nd in 2011. And it concluded on May 10th, 2012. It was a total of 24 episodes. Of course, Steve Carell was no longer with the show, and you've got the
darn
at that point, and just as a, you know, from a business standpoint, the show declined drastically in viewership in season 8.
Yes.
A lot of people tuned in for episode 1 of season 8, and it just went down, down, down after that. So, you know, in real in real world statistics, like, this, you know, it was starting to fail. And I think it's worth pointing out that season 7 of The Office, the showrunner was Paul Lieberstein, who is, of course, Toby. He was the sole showrunner for season 7 as Steve Carell was exiting the show. And then Greg Daniels started to step back in season 8. So they were kind of co-showrunners in season 8. And then by season 9, Greg Daniels wanted to take full ownership again, and he was the showrunner for season 8. So I want to just point out that there was a lot of transition happening in season 8.
Oh, you mean there was Greg Daniels came back for season 9 and was
correct
sole showrunner. Yeah.
But right. But he started stepping back in, like, season 7, mm-hmm, right, was Paul Lieberstein was the showrunner, period.
Right.
And then season 8, all of a sudden, Greg Daniels is there again as kind of a co-showrunner.
Gotcha.
And then
I gotcha.
In season 9,
yeah,
Greg Daniels gotcha. Is the showrunner again. So it's, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's, you know.
So there was some turbulence. There was a little bit of
Feels like it. Feels like it.
Big star leaves. Core of the show no longer there as the showrunner leaves. And some characters take some different directions.
I mean, obviously, in season 8, there is a decline in terms of viewership, but then also like critical response and ratings of episodes, I think. At the same time, like, it's not as if the show, I mean, there was a decline for sure, but it's not as if the show, I think, was ever really in danger of getting canceled. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the show was still very popular, but it was such a different product that was on the air, you know?
As we've talked about before, the comedy night done right, I mean, that was in full swing. I mean, people were tuning in on Thursday nights. The show was still very much a part of that prime time television slot, you know? And people were going to watch, but it declined very quickly when Steve left.
Yeah, there's certainly... I think, especially if you watch the list, you know, and we've already had some of the show without Steve Carell, but we had sort of like, you know, D'Angelo Vickers, we had Will Ferrell sort of like this very larger than life comedy star to kind of close out season 7. Right. So it was like Steve Carell's gone, but hey, here's a really big dessert for you before you go. It was like, oh, that was satisfying.
Yeah.
So season 8, it almost feels like, okay, now Robert California is the new, like, Michael Scott. Or what? That's just how you could see it if you were coming in. And, like, yeah. James Spader is not Steve Carell. He's hilarious in this role. But the heart of the show was so much about Michael's heart, his, like, need to be loved and solving that problem in his life that felt like no one loved him. That has been resolved now. And so the show is, like, What is the show now? That's such a hard landscape to navigate for showrunners and to, like, especially for an audience that's expecting such a good show.
I'm gonna say, you know, that I really enjoyed the first half of season 8 as it was coming out. Like when I first was, you know, when I was there when Steve Carell quit left the show. Which apparently he didn't even want to do, and, you know, it was all due to, you know, production business deals and stuff like that, and he wanted to keep doing the show, and he had to leave, unfortunately, and they thought they could keep doing this show without him. But, you know, I really did enjoy The List, The Incentive, Lotto, Garden Party, Getty, Mrs. California, Trivia. I mean, there are some Pool Party. There are some really great episodes in the first part of season 8 where it's actually, I really like Andy, the character.
Yeah.
I think this is one of, throughout that entire arc, I really enjoy Andy's character. I think we get a little bit into this Parks and Rec territory where every episode somebody needs to tell somebody all the moral lessons that they need to learn from this episode. You know, like, we get that in Gettysburg when Jim and Daryl are kind of explaining things to Andy, or even in The Incentive when, you know, he gets the Nard Dog tattoo. I would love to just move on from that and have an idiot manager again, just like we did with Michael Scott, an idiot with good intentions. But you don't really get that with Andy, right? Because we have this weird, like, backstory of him having this extremely wealthy, elite family that he's trying to please. It just really starts to confuse.
Soft penis debutante is a good way to put it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But.
Well,
sorry.
To quote the Lizard King there, Mr. California.
Yeah. I think broadly speaking, and it, you know, it's funny to think about reception and what was going on at the time, because it's been so far removed from that era of actually being on the air that some of these things, like, it's funny how so much of it fades into the background with a lot of TV like this, because network TV is obviously not as big as it was even 10 years ago. And with streaming services and fan reception and things like that, things can come back and they can change. I mean, we're you know, with Party Down, we've seen a show that just kind of came back from the dead after all these years later and things like that. And so it's funny to think about it now, because The Office and many TV shows just kind of exist on streaming. You can watch them whenever you want. You can have a very different relationship to TV shows now that you can just kind of tap in whenever, and depending on your platform, you know? So it's interesting to think about what was going on at the time. But when I think about just the show itself, what happens within the show on the screen, I think season 8 is so much of The Office trying to find itself. And not just without Michael Scott, but so much of the rest of the characters kind of have to recalibrate without Michael there to be in relation to. Mm-hmm. And I actually think, like, you know, it's when I think about those early episodes with Andy, it's a lot less about, for me, it's a lot, I don't think it's a morality thing. It's more like Andy is the person who, and like, and it's, I remember that in the going into season 8, talking to friends about who we thought would be manager and why we thought it would be Dwight or Jim or whoever it would be, or an external character or something like that. But as the more and more I've looked back on it and rewatched it, I think it's clear why Andy was kind of chosen, and I think he's the person that actually makes the most sense from the existing ensemble. And the reason was because, on one hand, he's the most malleable. His character can change the most and does change the most.
Yeah.
And also, like, there is room to grow and room to develop in Andy that doesn't exist within Dwight, Jim, and some of the other characters. Like, the idea of Andy kind of having, in the list, Andy has to stand up for the rest of his team, and he has to go in. He goes, no. And then he gets in, and he speaks up for the losers. And they kind of, and the incentive, you know, they say, like, Jim says, like, we're all ready to see what great idea you have next. But no one's actually expecting you to do this, but, you know, we're all waiting for what comes next. And then I think there's an element of Andy having to step up in a way where if grow into this role of leadership.
And then going right into Garden Party, which is a trip into Andy's psyche, like, you know, very much uncovering layers of Andy that, have sort of been on the wayside the first 7 seasons, or I guess 4 seasons.
Well, and you think a little bit more about, like, all right, let's say we're Jim. Jim standing up for his team and coming up with good ideas to motivate them, that seems too consistent with his character. Mm-hmm. It's more of a surprise if he does the opposite, and then it doesn't feel like himself. And if it's Dwight and he's too considerate, then that also feels like it violates his character a little bit. So I think Andy is the person who, in a weird way, kind of like Michael, not intentionally brings a lot of heart to the role. But, I mean, you have so much of the ensemble finding themselves, the characters finding themselves, and then that all leads, and that's all before the show goes to Florida, which is just such a total trip. Literally, it's a trip from where the show
is. It's a vacation for the show.
I'll say, too, it's like it's uncharted territory, in that it's like, you know, we have Andy stepping in as manager, this is a character that we understand. And when we're moving into season 2 of The Office, we don't totally understand Michael. Like, you know, he's still a bit of an anomaly. And I think that by the time Andy takes over as manager, it's a little difficult, because we understand this character's motivations, like, and it just, I mean, they kind of have to, in a way, in season 8, they've divided Michael Scott into Andy and Robert California. It doesn't totally work for me. I mean, I love those two characters individually. They have such amazing one-liners. But, you know, Robert California stepping in as this very prominent corporate figure in season 8.
Prominent sexual figure as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, this is, look, this is something that
this
I thought a lot
a
about,
scumbag.
Too.
Scumbag. I hate it.
Look, people love to post this quote from Steve Carell that The Office couldn't exist today, right? Because it's just too offensive, which I disagree with, because Michael Scott, the character, is an idiot, and we all understand that as we watch the show. But Robert California is a very successful businessman who is definitely abusing people and harassing people and speaking inappropriately in a workplace. And
would you say more so than just, Michael?
But Michael has these good intentions. You know what I mean? Even if he's an idiot, even if, you know, sexual harassment, those episodes, yes, it's all extremely awkward. But Robert California knows exactly what he's doing, and he also reveals that he's probably sex trafficking, like, right near the end of his exit from the show. So this kind of lovable fallibility that the manager of the Scranton branch has, it disappears in season 8.
So, overall, you don't like season 8. Is that right?
Right.
You don't like
That's
it.
That's right.
Yeah. And I would wager amongst our listeners, like what do you think the split is that would say like don't care for season 8? Like I would say at least half, right? Like I feel like when I look at generally comments, like season 8, just most people, 8 and 9 are an attachable component of The Office. They're not like necessary to the show. I just generally get the sense that's kind of what the public feels about 8 and 9. Do you think that's far off or not?
Yes and no. I mean, I understand that sentiment for sure. I think there's a large segment of the population, or a population, of people who watch The Office.
Of the human race.
Who watched it.
The population of the world. Go ahead.
Well, I think a lot of people watched The Office many years later when it was not on TV. They watched it all at once. And this whole, like, Michael Scott leaving, what's going to happen next? Like, they didn't experience that the way that we did in the moment, you know? Yeah. And I think if you were to watch it as a binge, you probably experienced season 8 and 9 very, very differently, you know?
Sure.
I imagine that some people view that element of the show differently. I mean, the three of us talk to each other and we can come to certain conclusions, and sometimes it's easy to feel like we represent some sort of general consensus. Even though I think we're people right all the time. I just imagine that a lot of people have different relationships to the show than we do in terms of how they watched it, when they watched it, and what they prefer, you know. I'm sure that there are people out there who love season 9.
Totally.
Like it wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's just one thing.
You know,
I think
season 8 feels like if you took seasons of The Office and they were albums by a musician. Like season 8 is the album after like a band member left a band, and it's like their first solo album, and it's like it's pretty good, but it's not what I know this for. That's kind of how 8 feels. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like first solo album. And it's like, not bad.
I think...
Good try.
I think, too, that there is an element of The Office that gets really, like, changed, and it's almost impossible to change back. And I think Sean tapped into it very well, even though he got up and walked away just now.
Just stormed out. No, he didn't. He's doing something.
Yeah. But basically, the thought that I had was he was talking about how Michael kind of got split between Robert California and Andy, and I disagree with that a little bit. Mm. Obviously, Robert California is more of a substitute for the David Wallace, Joe Bennett's of the world. And I think that the big difference there is that Andy is so much more self-aware than Michael. Not that he's totally self-aware, but he's overly
self-aware.
Yeah, or like Michael shows you self-awareness in a way that like is very surprising and endearing sometimes. where it's like you didn't realize he was paying attention in that way. And it's like neuroticism with Andy a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Robert California as a corporate figure is so suffocating that, I mean, it's like a lot of the humor is kind of watching Andy or a lot of times Jim, mm-hmm. or whomever kind of squirm, under what the hell is Robert thinking and what does he want me to do this? And Jim is trying to escape and Andy is trying not to hire this Mrs. California or whatever it is.
Right.
It's just a different dynamic.
And they kind of intertwine that with Andy and like overbearing father figures, something he struggles with. We learn in this season.
Yeah, well, and something else that sort of like, again, is kind of breaks within the show is pretty much all the way up until season. Well, it seems as if the path of success within the office is that you kind of succeed in the branch and then you become the manager and then maybe you can go to corporate. That's like how you succeed in this world. And for a while, that's like what Michael is trying to do. That's what Jim tries to do in season 6. And then even when Saber comes in, there's this element of growth. What's Dwight going to do? He's going to, you know, go to Florida and try to get another position. And I think what happens with Michael leaving to be with Holly, like that sort of goes away in part because the corporate structure is totally... like it's just weird. It's different. It's Saber. It's his company. And it's his parent company in Florida. And Robert is CEO. He's not even like a directly above Michael Andy. And it doesn't seem like any of the other characters now that Jim, Dwight, and Daryl all kind of have their ambition either tempered or snuffed out in some sort of way. Like it's the sort of path to success of being manager doesn't really seem to appeal to them so much anymore.
Right.
With the exception of Dwight.
Well, and in past seasons, like I think what used to be Jan and then Ryan and David Wallace is all combined into Robert California, who's suddenly David Wallace or Jan, who would show up once every handful of episodes. Suddenly Robert California is like in the office all the time. And to be clear, like Robert California, like we're talking a lot about him, but like he's such the primary difference. I mean, him and Andy between the first 7 seasons and this, as far as like who is tasked to fill the void of Michael Scott in season 8. And the answer is Ed Helms and Robert California. And then, of course, later on, you do get Nellie, and the whole Florida arc. Yeah, is like this weird fever dream of The Office. But again, it's now when I'm rewatching and I'm on season 8, I'm kind of looking forward to the Florida arc just because it's so. Looks different, feels different. You get some different scenery. And it's almost like you can feel the creators, the writers, all the actors are feeling that, where it's like, done 7 seasons. Let's just try some new stuff just to feel it out. And like going back to the musician analogy, it's like, I want to try a slightly different genre of music, or I want to like try a different instrument.
I want to write an 8-minute ballad.
Eight-minute power ballad, baby. Get some didgeridoos back there. That's season 8, dog. Yeah.
I
need you to like it, Sean. I need you to double down on your hate.
It's look, when Steve Carell is there, when Michael Scott is there, it's such a real character that you watch him do things that are so bad and yet you still feel sorry for him because you know that he's doing that out of his insecurities, out of his lack of self-awareness. And when you get into season 8, it's about this, you know, battle between Andy and Robert California. And Robert California is kind of just a big clump of one-liners, you know? He's not a consistent character. He's not believable in any way. I mean, he's certainly just so much more outrageous than David Wallace, who was our corporate figure for 7 seasons before this.
David Wallace is out here inventing suckets.
And David Wallace steps back in at the end of season 8 of this.
He's
and saves the day, which is also a very awkward, uncomfortable moment in this. But I don't know. When Michael Scott made mistakes, when Michael Scott did people wrong, you felt this sense of, you understood where he was coming from. And you understood that he was an idiot and he had a good heart. And with Andy Bernard, he's just a selfish, spoiled brat. And with Robert California,
here comes
he's
jazz.
Just a super bizarre, probably like sexually abusive. Crazy person.
Does your perception of Andy change at all throughout season 8?
Throughout season 8, of course. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Edwin.
I think you need. I think there are a couple of things we should probably do. I think number one, I think your perception of Andy is like, we should try to focus on him in season 8. Like the way that his character ends, in theory, shouldn't influence the way you view him in the season, because that hasn't happened yet. Like, I agree that he ends in a terrible place, but like, I think the version of himself that appears in season 8 is a bit more relatable. And like, I do think that he shows like more of that humanity in season 8.
Agreed.
Up until he kind of gets driven insane by Robert and Nelly. And the other thing that I think we should probably do at a certain point is like, at a certain point, we should stop talking about Michael, because he doesn't exist in this season.
We should
engage with the season itself. You know, that's all I mean to say. You know, because I understand what you're saying, but yes,
yeah, that's what this episode is. It's like, yeah, the weight of Michael Scott leaving is like this ghost.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That looms over season 8 for sure.
I mean, yeah, I think that was what was on everyone's minds, mm-hmm. as they were making season 8 was, how are we going to continue this show? Because this is not the first time that this has happened, right? I mean, there's so many TV shows. I mean, X-Files comes to mind in terms of the exact like number of seasons that this happened. X-Files changed their two main cast members after 7 seasons or something like that. And it's like, why watch the show after that? I still find season 8 very funny, but it just, yeah, I think it's important to talk about why it lacks, you know, why, I mean, the 6 episodes in season 1 are so much better to me than the 50 episodes that are in seasons 8 and 9.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that, really.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, like, at a certain point, though, like, we should talk about why, what's happened. We can talk about, we can dive a little deeper than, like, this is good and this is bad and here's why, you know? Like, or I like this more and I don't like this as much and here's why. Like, I think there's a lot more interesting stuff that happens in season 8. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I think one of the things that happens in season 8 is something that is very characteristic of what happens in seasons 8 and 9, which is the show is really, really fully transitioned away from these are characters who work in an office to, mm-hmm. like, the plot dynamics are a lot less like, these are the characters who work in the office and this is part of office life, and a lot more like, now what happens to Daryl, and now what happens to Aaron, and now what happens to Gabe. Like, there is, the show is transitioned, like, the ensemble is so strong, but at the same time, it becomes so much more character driven in that regard. And I think what kind of happens is you get a lot less storylines that are kind of brought together by, like, think about early seasons where it's like, oh, it's Secretary's, or not Secretary's Day, it's a bad example, it's Valentine's Day in the office, and all these things are happening. And what you get a lot more of in season 8 is like, what's going to happen with Daryl and Val and Brandon? And I think what is characteristic of season 8 and 9 is that they cram so much extra plot in that it's difficult to be as invested, because number one, mm-hmm. there are just numerically more characters to deal with, and then number two, there isn't as much time for those things to develop and actually feel compelling. I don't want to tap into season 9 on this yet, but it happens a lot more in season 9.
Yes.
But I'm just thinking of when you think about Jim and Pam's romance and how that plays out over like 4 seasons versus, or maybe not 4 seasons. I mean, obviously it's through the whole show. But when does most of the action happen? In the first 3 seasons. That's like the most dramatic will they won't they sort of era. But that's 3 seasons, you know.
Right.
Aaron and Andy happens in what? The end of season 6 and through season 7 and through season 8 yeah. a little bit, but like it's just not the same. And maybe mm-hmm. that's a bad comparison, but like but Daryl and Val, for example, is one. Mm-hmm. Or the way that Nelly enters and
starts as Gabe and
like
Val.
we learn everything about Nelly in 3 episodes. You know, it's just the everything feels so sort of abbreviated.
Mm. Yeah, even
plot development in season 8.
And then in the midst of all that is this trip to Florida, you know, which has somehow fit into everything you just said. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot, when you look at looking at the episode list, especially in the first dozen episodes or so, which is the list into Pool Party, that to me is the Andy's story. Is that, I mean, literally ending with like Andy losing a ring that he wants to use to like propose to Aaron, mm-hmm. right? At pool party. Because after that, once
to Aaron,
to Aaron. And then once the Florida arc comes up, Aaron's in Florida and then mm-hmm. you know, then he goes down to get her and then everything kind of goes awry after that. Right. Mm-hmm. But having that Tallahassee arc in there, that's, people remember season 8. It's like, isn't that the one where they go to Florida? It's just such a weird part of the season. I think that throws a lot of people. But I do agree. Like, I like the new environments it puts the characters in. Like, Florida is interesting because it separates the office into, like, 2 groups of people for an extended period of time. Those that are in Florida, there's some replacement characters. Like, Jim and Pam have their second kid this season. You know, you talk about...
Yeah.
It took 4 seasons for them to kiss and go on a date. And now it's just like, mm-hmm. here's their second kid season. Pam's going on maternity leave, has to train a replacement.
I mean,
there's just totally new grounds for storytelling.
I want to touch on this because when
should we
they
take a break
went,
first? Is it, or have we hit our? Is it time?
We're gonna take a break, okay. And then I'm gonna come back.
Then I'm
hot. On this
yes.
Welcome back. We're talking about season 8, and I am coming in hot. With an opinion. I mean, I really have a lot of hot opinions about season 8.
You just got
like
a lot of hot
eight,
opinions in general.
I feel like season 8 did Andy dirty. I feel like the way that season 8 started, I was very happy with Andy being the branch manager, with mm-hmm. him, you know, kind of trying to learn and support the ensemble cast.
Yeah. Does a good
we
job.
We get that in the list. We get that in the incentive.
Gettysburg,
we get that in the garden
trying to
party.
Do something nice. He's just trying to do something nice.
It's
no one appreciate what I'm doing here.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I love
DM
all
does
that
GB.
Stuff. I love all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think that this season 8 does Andy very dirty, and it's. That you feel very sorry for Michael, right? You feel like he doesn't have a supportive family. He
yep.
doesn't have any friends except for Todd Packer. So you always, no matter what Michael Scott does, you feel sorry for him. He's that nerd who has found himself in a position of power, and like you feel bad for him. And with Andy Bernard, it's different.
Well, it always seems like him and Aaron are a perfect match, and the writing sort of does everything it can to keep bringing them apart, right? Bring them together, mm-hmm. rip them apart over and over. And it happens again in season 8, and it's already happened before. And it's just like Andy sort of keeps tumbling downwards, it feels like, over the course of the season.
I would mention that Andy also doesn't have a supportive family. Andy also isn't shown to have any friends.
Correct.
Outside of, you know, anyone outside of Aaron.
But that becomes such a story point, you know?
And a small Michael, to medium penis.
It was just in the background. It was so brilliantly just kind of disguised, you know, he calls his mom and it says, "Mom, I'm engaged.
Mom, I'm getting married."
Really?
No, you're not. Yeah. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
No, I.
Why? I always say that.
Yes, and because certainly, like, at no point did we get, you know, like in Garden Party, they're literally eavesdropping on a taped conversation between Andy and his dad. Andy getting dressed down by his very harsh dad in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's very blatant. It's very like, here's Andy's character kind of on a platter. Here's why he is the way he is, right? We never get that with Michael because that's just not a luxury we had. We do in this season because, again, it's pretty abbreviated as a result of, like, everything they have to do to win over the audience, really, and make Andy as lovable and as someone you would care about. Where, yeah, he's sort of been a side character for a lot of the rest of the show. We'd never really... He was just sort of this, as Dwight said, a preppy freak who made us laugh. And now the show is tasked with, like, yeah, we have to, like, actually care about him. It was very hard to do. Well, and I think it's just, like, people... You're okay with that or you weren't, you know? For a lot of season eight. But, like, it goes interesting places for me. The way it continues to get more interesting.
I think, too, there is kind of sort of a... I don't know if it was purposefully done, but there is something interesting about the fact that Michael's background is never really revealed. Mm-hmm. It's dripped out very slowly.
Yeah.
And even until we get to season seven, in like the counseling episode, do some of these things come out? Think about when Daryl says, "What happened to you in high school?" Like, we don't know. outside of, you know, the kids
that
threw him into the fountain and he got his ponytail stuck in the power drill.
Poop ball, I should have known.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm just going to say I would love like a Daria type animated show of Michael Scott going through high school.
Oh, wow. That's
just going to throw it out
there.
Wow. Phyllis Vance is a character.
Oh, yeah, Phyllis would be there.
I will say that, you know, I think you made an interesting point, Alex, about Andy and Aaron, which is that it doesn't seem like there's any really good reason why they aren't together.
Yes, like, it's like they're forcing ways for them to break up.
Even with Jessica,
what, Aaron and
this
Andy.
Sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah. And I
yes,
kind of get it that, like... I kind of get that, like, they kind of missed each other and rejected each other too many times and things like that. But it does always kind of feel like a little... It feels a little forced in a way, sometimes, some of their relationship drama. And then also, one thing that Robert does bring to the season is like there's like sometimes there's a lot of clarity, you know, that he brings,
yeah.
Which is like, you like her.
Yes.
I do. She likes you. Yeah. And like there's another moment where he's like, why wouldn't you just, nope, I'm staying out of this.
Yes.
Like, no, Robert. Robert does have a way of kind of cutting through in certain ways. I mean, he obviously uses his intellect for evil instead of good, but it is very funny that he can bring clarity to that particular dynamic.
I am so tired of the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Sometimes I feel you don't know food at all.
I don't know, man. I feel like Robert California can be kind of a hollow character. He is, you know, these one-liners and these monologues, and he's a very important part of season eight. You know, he is, I mean, Michael Scott kind of becomes Andy plus Robert California. And
how so?
Michael Scott is a big hole to fill when he leaves, right? Mm-hmm. So when he leaves, you get Andy as the Scranton manager, but you also have to supplement that with Robert California, who's coming in with these very outrageous very difficult to read.
It's kind of opinions. It's a different type of chaos. It's like Andy has a lot of the anxiety and insecurities that Michael Scott has. Robert is bringing some of that chaos. It's just Robert's chaos is dark, like dark chaos, like not good.
and I'll just say, like, I know, like, you know, we keep talking about like Michael Scott or whatever, but I mean,
you do.
Michael Scott has that dark chaos. He has that dark and light chaos in him. And when he leaves, it's hard, man. Like, I mean, just like you don't feel as bad for Andy as I felt as bad for Michael in certain situations.
Yeah. I mean, it's an impossible task. I don't think you could. Which is why the show goes so many weird places, I think.
I definitely, I think definitely from a writing perspective, they explored a lot of different directions as well. Like, they took a lot of different characters in different directions, and they put them in different scenarios. I think something else that kind of happens with this season is that some characters kind of run out of, in terms of plot, in terms of the things that are motivating certain characters and driving a lot of these plot dynamics, some characters lose a lot of steam. I'm thinking of Kelly and Ryan. And I think that's probably a big reason why they wrote them off in season 9 is because, like, from a plot perspective, they didn't have as much to do. They were just kind of, as the ensemble grows and everybody seemed a little more fully realized, mm-hmm. like, they seemed less realized because their dynamic was on again, off again for so much. The other thing that I think happens a lot in this season is comedically it goes a lot broader in certain areas. And it's one of the things that makes this season unique in a way, is that the jokes feel different. And the same can be said of season 9, but I think in a weird way, season 8 is very dense in terms of how much plot gets covered, all the places they go, all the jokes they make. There's just a different feel to a lot of the jokes. And a lot of that does come from Robert California. Maybe not so much the comedically broad stuff, but I'm thinking of how his presence is different. Like this idea that I remember around the time season 8 was airing, reading an interview with, I think, Paul Lieberstein, who said like that Robert kind of captures this dynamic of when your boss comes around, you feel this, like you feel in an office environment maybe, and it's maybe a more senior person, you feel
Robert
this.
Robert California, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, you have to sit up a little straighter. You want to feel like you're really engaged with your work. You want to put on like this very good impression, which season 7, the office was so relaxed. And it doesn't ever feel like they're working at all. And then you compare that a little bit to, like, let's say the incentive, when all of a sudden you see them selling really hard. It's just a different feel. And Robert inspires a bit of that, even though that wears off quite a bit by the end of the season. Yeah, the power of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Engaged Stanley. Only happens maybe 3 times the whole show.
And Andy says, I've worked across Stanley for years. This is nap time.
It's that and the sumo suit. Like, that's all we get that's all we get out of Stanley, in Florida Stanley.
Also, man, I love in Lotto with just Stanley in the season when they have to Andy is trying to they're interviewing all these new people for the warehouse, and it just cuts down to one of the guys eating a lunch out of a lunchbox that says Stanley, and then it pans over to Stanley, and he's laughing on the phone. And then later in the episode, pans up again. He's just looking angrily into the conference room. I love that.
And that's the kind of, I don't know, it starts having a little more fun with the characters that way in season 8, too. Like, I agree with you, Sean. There's plenty of thorns about season 8 that are tough, but like, there is. I guess I'm more conditioned just to like look for the good stuff as I watch it more. And like, you know, I really like Robert California. I think every scene, everything he does is funny to me. Tells you a lot about who I am as a person, I guess. But it's like, and I mean, really the evolution of like what happens in one season to Andy is just a crazy distraction. It's like this crazy huge thing that think about by pool party. Like, everyone's on Andy's side. By the time Get the Girl happens, they're literally doing like this, like pro Andy or pro Nelly vote of manager. Like, this is all, like, there's another fight for manager later on again in season 8 with Nelly. Like, it happens again.
Yeah.
Todd Packer comes and goes. Like, there's so many there's so many subplots
it's
going
so
on.
Weird,
it's so
dude.
Dense.
It's
like,
so,
Edwin, that was a really
so
good point.
It's so chaotic.
It is very dense, yeah. I hadn't really thought of it that way
that
before.
That is another thing that maybe is... That I struggle with a little bit with this season, which is that, like, the way that Nelly comes in and just kind of sits in the manager's chair, like, that whole yeah. thing is just kind of it's kind of uncomfortable and strange, and it makes it really difficult to kind of rehabilitate Nelly as a character and part of the ensemble to keep her around, is that she comes in so forcefully and disrupts in a way that doesn't feel like it's really difficult after the way that she enters and sits in the manager's chair and really, like, you know, the way that she displaces Andy makes it really difficult, I think, for the show at the end of season 8 and into season 9 to just kind of incorporate her again as a character. Yeah. And that the show doesn't do itself favors in that regard.
And then, yeah, Andy gets fired and adopts 12 dogs. Bye, Andy. It's like, that's it. And then,
it's so bad.
And then suddenly so David bad. Wallace rebuys the company and Andy's back as a janitor. Oh, no, he's not.
Yo, I'll just say,
break it down, Sean.
As somebody who doesn't support seasons 8 and 9, when they go down to Florida, and you know, Nelly does the whole, like, you know, say who's running this, you know,
right
meeting, and she says, "Oh, looking for a man, are you?" You know, I was so pumped on where this show was going.
Huge whopping penis.
Exactly. That's
I
what I wanted
to get
to
some
see.
Nelly drops. Let it
That's
fly.
What I want. I wanted to see that huge whopping penis.
You poor simple boy.
That's what I am. That's what I am, and that's what I want. I was disappointed by where season 8 went. I wanted it to get so extreme. You know, there was consideration amongst the writers to have Jim cheat on Pam, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are you pro this happening?
No.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not pro that happening. I'm pointing out that they were ready, eager to make mistakes. Eager.
Oh.
Right?
I like
Am I
this
right?
take. I like this take.
Am I right? Am I wrong? Am I wrong?
I think what no, happens in season not. 8 is, like, so much of these things that happen in season 8, all the way to this dynamic of Jim in the, like, being, you know, the Kathy, Jim, Pam thing. Like, the writers are clearly trying so many things.
Yeah.
And it seems like there is an element of trying to push the show in a lot of directions, either to be more dramatic or more comedic in certain ways, or more extreme, without the same kind of consideration for the same sort of structure that held the show. But it ends up with a place where, like, all of a sudden there is no structure. And Nelly can just sit in the manager's chair, and the CEO is a crazy person. And I love also that, like, that becomes crystallized in Turf War when Harry Generona is like, "We're not going to do this, and you're not going to be doing this in 6 months. Robert is running this company into the ground," which is, like, such an interesting thing to hear because Robert, like, he elucidates why he spent so much time in Scranton, and it's interesting to hear that perspective from another branch, and it just kind of crystallizes something that we didn't know the whole time, which is that the company is not...
Robert California is not good at his job.
Yeah.
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 Thank God David Wallace is there to scoop it up, save it. Yet again, dude, David Wallace, just the hand of God... coming down to save the show single-handedly.
It really is beautiful the way that they weave David back into the show.
He is beautiful.
This big fat pig is beautiful.
There's another thing that kind of comes up, I think, maybe with this whole thing about David Wallace buying back the company, is that the show is at a very strange point when this happens, which is there have been so many external characters that have come in, or not external, but, like, new characters that have come in as sort of corporate leader figures, all the way from Jan, Ryan, David, Charles, D'Angelo, Joe Bennett, even Robert, that by the time you need someone to, like, quote-unquote, saved under Mifflin, like, you can bring in David Wallace, and it's like, oh, of course, who else? David Wallace. But at the same time, you couldn't have brought in the external character.
Yeah.
And it would have felt kind of strange, because there have been so many new external characters in positions of power. Yeah.
It's funny how you say save Dunder Mifflin, bring someone in to save Dunder Mifflin, but it is bring someone in to save the show. Like, I mean, we had, you know, an arc with Will Ferrell. That was huge. You know, that was like leading into season 8. It was, he did such a fabulous job. And
he was a nightcap on Michael Scott.
An incredible night.
A tequila sunrise on Michael Scott.
Tequila sombrero.
Tequila sombrero. Well. I always say that.
Thank you.
Tequila sunrise. Mm-hmm. Gosh darn it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, the show. Sorry, the show.
Wrap it up for us.
Well, the ensemble. What I was going to say before I put a button on it, I guess, is the show's at this weird place where you can either bring back old characters or try to reintroduce new ones. But like the new characters feel a little more like stunt casting, and the old characters feel like you're digging way too far into the past sometimes, which is kind of an interesting feature of the show at this point in time. But season 8 is just so unique and different. Dense, I think, is a good way to describe it, because like there's so much that happens and there's so many funny moments scattered within, and I feel like maybe in this episode we didn't do enough job highlighting those funny moments. But season 8 is like one of the more interesting chapters of the show, like it or not. It's just, and I'm curious to hear what people think. If they maybe, I'm sure some people really love the season. I'm sure some people like don't even watch it. So I am curious to hear what everyone has to say.
We're gonna take a quick break and we're gonna meet back up and do some trivia.
You didn't say, well, there you have it.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it.
That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds.
All right, before we go to trivia to wrap up this episode, we did want to tap into the conference room for a quick question from Jason on our Discord, who writes, if you were working in the office as Sean, Alex, and Edwin, and it was the holiday season, what would your Christmas wish be from Andy? So, gentlemen, what would your Christmas wish be from Andy?
Like, what would I get from Andy?
Yeah, you can't wish that Andy were Michael Scott either.
Sean.
Free ride home is very good. Very good Christmas wish. Especially when, you know, you can get any mixed drink you want at the Christmas party.
Mm-hmm. You would wish for an F train to Brooklyn extra bitters?
F train to Brooklyn, that's a minivan ride to my house. Yes.
Gosh. Oh, he could get me. He could get me a punch card to the driving range where he went and hit 1,000 balls. And then he'd go to he'd get me a nice, you know, 10 buckets at the driving range. Maybe come with me sometimes, watch a little Cornell Hofstra slaughter, and get a beer and hit some
slaughter.
Balls.
Slaughter. Got some rally.
Got some blisties.
I feel like a full 24 hours with Andy could actually be fun. Like a few hours with him would be like really awkward, but like go deep with Andy.
You'd rather hang out 24 hours with Andy than a few hours.
I think you'd meet his brother.
It's hardcore, bro.
Who we know is a good guy. His parents, not good guys.
Bye, Pam.
But...
bye, tuna.
And so genuine. Such a sweetie.
I would wish for Andy to do the have the day that he wanted with Michael Scott. Cornell Hofstra slaughter.
Oh yeah.
You know, wings, then you hit the tizown. That's what I would wish for.
Yeah.
That's
sweet. That day.
Smoke a couple Macanudos.
Polish off some besties.
That's awesome.
Cool. Well, hey, thank you for your question, Jason. If you have more questions, please send them to us via email or through Discord. Message in a bottle, however you can get them to us.
Message in a bottle. Sean, let's do some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Woo! All right. For tonight's trivia, sent by EJ Commons, it's me again. Recent subscriber Scott's Tots, as I needed that sweet Scott extra content.
Tots, clots. Content.
I've compiled a list of questions from the other Edwin has missed, and I want to see how many you guys get right around the second time. All right, so these are the questions sent in by the other Edwin.
Okay.
First question is...
I understand nothing.
Yeah. I don't know what's about to happen.
What is the first cold open of season 5?
Season 5 opens with weight loss.
Is it the rap? Is it the Michael and Holly? No, that's just to go to commercial break. No, that's... first cold open of season 5, I don't know.
The way season 5 opens is Jim admits to everybody that he and Pam are engaged, and he gets tackled by Michael Scott. All right, guys.
Yeah, the way he drops the briefcase and the face he makes is great.
Tall guy's engaged.
All right, guys. Last cold open of season 5. What is that?
Whoa.
Company Picnic?
That's right.
Is there a cold open? There is in Company Picnic? I do not know. Man, that's a tough... yeah, those are tough trivia questions.
Company Picnic, what is the cold open?
Tell us.
We don't know. Tell us.
Everybody resetting the clocks on Michael Scott he eats a full chicken pot pie.
Family-sized chicken pot pie.
Last cold open of season 8.
Jim doing the tearaway suit on Dwight?
That's a good guess.
Is it Asian Jim?
It's in Free Family Portrait Studio.
It has to do with Oscar. Oscar.
Oh, it's the Get Better campaign video?
Gets vastly better. Vastly better.
More complicated.
Vast.
Sexuality is a spectrum.
Is this the content of all these questions?
Yeah. What is Kevin's excuse when Michael asks about hanging out the night of Jim's party?
Oh, I have to. He gets very...
I have to pick my brother up from the...
My brother is in town.
Yes, that...
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not all cold opens. Okay, yeah.
That's right. Alaskan Film Festival.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay, great.
In the episode The Duel, what is taped under the kitchen table?
Throwing stars.
God, you're good.
I was going to say size.
What name does Kelly want to give her hypothetical child in the negotiation?
Just to go back to size. When Michael says that you sigh like Jan, he's referring to the weapons.
You sigh.
What was the question, Sean? I'm sorry.
In the episode... what name does Kelly want to give the hypothetical child in the negotiation?
Oh, Usher.
Yeah.
Why can't I think of the middle name? Usher da-da-da-da-da Kapoor.
What is it?
Usher Jennifer Hudson Kapoor.
Ah.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you.
Or what is the opening to Bullfrog in Love before the instrumental joined in the music?
It's like I find you absolutely... First of all, Sean, calm down. I need you to tone it down, bud. You're at like a 10.
You're coming in too
I need
hot.
You way down at a 1, okay? Number 2, are we talking the one that's like, I find you absolutely riveting?
No, I think the question is, what is the part that is sung before the instruments come in? It's like da 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 da. You wanna share my pad? Croak croak croak. bullfrog in love, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand the question either. All right,
let's keep moving then.
Next question.
All right. In the duel, Michael asks, how so, in response to finding out Angela is crazy in bed, what is Dwight's answer?
Flexible and eager.
Oh, yeah.
Eager and flexible, yes. Nice. Nailed it. And finally.
I remember that because how those choice of words are just so strange for like the order in which he says them and to describe Angela. I don't know what it's like. Huh. And doesn't he says that Michael goes, really? Like he has a second of like,
really?
One of the best bloopers. I know this was a question from a few weeks ago. Is when Dwight is reading this little like note for Angela. And he says, "You are pretty and petite, but to me, you are oh so sweet." And they both like can't stop laughing.
How many more do we got? Last one.
Dwight mentions that Garbage the Cat has proven useful by doing what?
He's a barn cat.
Right. He killed a family of raccoons.
Oh,
and he proved his worth.
I got you. He killed the family of raccoons.
I'm trying to stand up for Garbage.
You should stand up for Garbage. They decorated their house with garbage.
In the picture of Michael and Ed Truck,
yeah,
what part of the outfit does he match with his tie?
Fanny pack?
His fanny pack.
That's right. Hey.
Blap, blap.
Guys, this is it. That's it. We did it. It's very late.
It's very late for Sean and I.
Mm-hmm.
It's very early for Edwin. And we're done with this episode. Take us out.
Thank you for listening. You can call and leave us a voicemail. You can send us an email, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on social media. Join us on Patreon. Join us on Discord. We love to hang out and interact with you. This episode was recorded over video chat. Thank you so much for listening. It's always great that we get to do the show. Appreciate you all for listening, hanging out with us, interacting with us. Thank you for bearing with us as we release a day late. We wish Sean a fast and easy recovery. And stay tuned for episode Season 8, Part 2. We shall see. But anyway, take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Edwin, ISO coast to coast. Love to see that.
Pippity poppy, give me this up.
Yes, sir.
I'll be detained.
I know who I want to take me home. I know who I want to take me home. Take me home. Oh.
You know what? Fine. I try to start fun traditions for you guys, but if you don't want to sing, no traditions.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Good night.